Thank you, Louise. I'm going to read just a little bit, at least to start, a little bit of Hebrews chapter 12, the first two verses. And this is on page 313 in the New Testament section of your Pew Bible, if you want to follow along. And I ask your patience. I'm still recovering from a cold that I had all through our vacation last week. So, got a little bit of a frog in my throat. The writer of the letter to Hebrews says this at the beginning of chapter 12. Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Okay. That brief reading, and we'll let kids go downstairs if there's someone to take them downstairs. I don't know. Check with Dharma and see if you're needed, Giuseppe. Thank you. As Tomi and Louise have already observed, this is a season when much of the world, much of our world in the United States, sets aside a time for remembrance. Tomorrow's Memorial Day, and lots of us are probably going to barbecue or go to the beach or go shopping. But some folks go to the cemetery to honor those who have gone before, especially those in the armed forces. And part of being a community of faith, part of being a church, is remembering. And so I think Memorial Day has a significance for the church outside of whatever significance it has for our society as a whole. Those of you who are more liturgically minded will say, well, what about All Saints Day? That's when the church is supposed to remember. To which I will say, I will have forgotten about remembering by the time we get to that part of the year. So my apologies. Nonetheless, remembering those who've gone before is an important part of the function of any faith community, I think. And part of that is because the church is not just who you see here gathered. First of all, we all know it's not the building, right? That's a Quaker thing. It's a meeting house, not a church. The people who gather are the church. But more than that, it's not just those who are here on a particular Sunday or who have been here for the last couple of years or who have been here since they were Cassidy's age. The church is all the generations that have gone before. The church is an invisible body that reaches not only across all sorts of geographic boundaries in the present, but back through time to Jesus and the apostles and to before them, to all the people who were called by God in various ways and who responded out of faith. The church, invisible and intergenerational, perhaps, is one way to think of it. It goes way back before whenever it was that you got here, or when I got here. And so for that reason, memory is an important part of what we do as church. Keeping in mind those who have gone before is one of the things that the church needs to be about. It's no accident that our English verb for memory is remember. When we remember things, we are putting them back together. We are taking parts that perhaps have been neglected or that have not been seen lately and bringing them back to light, bringing them back with the rest of the body. That's what remembering is about. And that, in part, is what this text is about in Hebrews chapter 12. And to some extent, it's an artificial, the division, as we all know, the verse and chapter divisions in the Bible are artificial to some extent. And so chapter 12 begins at a perhaps somewhat infelicitous point, because the first word is therefore. And anytime we see therefore, we have to go back and see what the premise is that the writer is basing his statement upon. And the premise is the entirety of chapter 11. And for your sake and mine, I didn't read the entire chapter. But if you know the chapter, you know that it's about faith. It's about people who, by faith, did certain things. The constant refrain through this chapter is by faith. So in verse 8, it says, by faith, Abraham, when he was called, obeyed by going out to a place which he was to receive for an inheritance, and he went out not knowing where he was going. By faith, he lived as an alien in the land of promise. And it also says of Moses in verse 24, by faith, Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. And then a little later, it mentions one of the women of the Hebrew Bible. By faith, Rahab the harlot, the prostitute, did not perish along with those who are disobedient after she had welcomed the spies in peace. Just three people from the Hebrew Bible. There are many more mentioned in this chapter. And then the writer goes on to say, what more shall I say? Time will fail me if I tell of Gideon or of Barak or of Samson or of David and Samuel and the prophets. So many people who went before this writer and the Jewish Christians to which he wrote. So many people of the Hebrew Bible who by faith were able to do certain things or were able to resist the temptation to do other things. And what is it that faith is? How do we define that word? The way that the writer of Hebrews defines it is in the first verse of chapter 11. Now, faith is the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. The assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. So faith, in part, is assurance of things that we don't yet have. Assurance of things that we have not yet seen demonstrated before us. And being convinced of the reliability of those things. Being convinced that we can trust in God. Assurance and conviction come through faith. Now, it's not blind faith. It's not unquestioning faith. The writer does not say, you are therefore assured of these things and you shall never question. But instead, we're invited to meditate upon the lives of those who made decisions like Abraham, not knowing what was going to happen, but being willing to trust in the assurance of things unseen and the conviction. Sorry, I got it wrong. The assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things not seen. So part of what we remember when we remember those who have gone before is their faith. We remember what evidence in their lives we can see that they had some assurance of God's goodness, that they had some conviction that things that they had not yet seen would yet come to pass in the fullness of time. And I want to mention two people today who are exemplars of faith for me in my life, and one of them you probably knew, and perhaps he was an exemplar for you as well. One of them you probably didn't know. The first, the one that you might know, is John Puncheon, who died earlier this year. He was a writer and a theologian and a teacher, and he taught at the Earlham School of Religion, the seminary where I was a student, for some time. Although by the time I got there, I had missed his tenure. I was favored out of season when he managed to come out of retirement to teach an intensive that I was privileged to take for 2 weeks on Quaker faith. John was a British friend, and if you know anything about Quakers, you know that almost all British friends come from what we call the unprogrammed part of the tradition, the other part of the tradition from ours. which is the programmed or pastoral tradition. And yet he took to American friends and to pastoral friends with a real love. And his ability, his where he came from among friends and where he found himself in Indiana among mostly pastoral friends, teaching at a seminary that trained pastors and other ministers, gave him the opportunity to speak to both parts of the tradition with integrity. He could speak a difficult word or an encouraging word both to unprogrammed friends and to pastoral friends, and he would be listened to. And a lot of that had to do with his unassuming British nature and I think the sort of latent Anglophilia that a lot of American Quakers have. You know, we really like British stuff, even though we know that there's something not quite right about that, right? But it also had to do with his clear Christian faith, a faith that was inviting and that was warm, but that was also clear in its convictions. And so he could speak to people from both parts of the tradition, either critically or with encouragement, and he would be listened to, because people could see the faith that that rested upon. If you haven't had the pleasure of reading one of John Punchin's books, see me afterwards and I can give you a list of good reading. So John Punchin is one of those people whose faith I remember as an example, as I think about those who have gone before us. And some of you I know have met him, and so perhaps you think of him the same way. Someone that you probably didn't get the chance to meet was a woman who never wrote scholarly books, but who was just as much a part of a lot of important places in Quakerdom and in tending to the Christian faith of friends in various places, and that was Catherine Jacobson. She died in January of this year. And she was an elder in Ohio Yearly Meeting, and the Conservative Yearly Meeting, which preserves the traditional, both the traditional Christian faith of friends and the traditional unprogrammed style of worship. So she had a deep spirituality that was based in that practice, in daily prayer, and in the leisurely, spacious, granting of time that conservative friends give to worship and to discernment and to consideration of difficult issues. She was not a fast friend, which some of us are known to be. An important part of Catherine's faith in her life was her marriage to Ken, her husband, who at her memorial service he remarked that they had spent 10,000 days together. And part of their married lives was service in various places, service to the Earlham School of Religion, service to the Only Friends School, which was part of Ohio Yearly Meeting, and service to Chicago Monthly Meeting, which was the Friends Meeting in Chicago where I first came to know them. Whether you met Catherine or not, you are beneficiaries of her ministry. Excuse me. Because she was an elder to many Friends ministers that we have had the benefit of having here for Quaker Heritage Day or other opportunities. Marcel Martin, who was our speaker just this past month, was eldered by Catherine in her ministry, giving workshops and various other kinds of instruction at Pendle Hill. Informally, Catherine eldered me in various ways. For example, when I was thinking about leaving my job in 2004 and I asked for a clearness committee, I knew I needed Catherine on my, along with Ken, on my clearness committee. Stephanie was there for that, because I knew that they could listen and ask the right questions. So Catherine had a faith that was open to questions, that was willing to take time to let those questions emerge, and then willing to wait more as the answers emerged. She had a faith that trusted always in the love of God. She had a faith that understood the importance of working in partnership with her husband and in being guided together. She is another exemplar of faith, of the assurance of things hoped for and the conviction of things unseen. Part of the reason that the writer of Hebrews mentions these exemplars of faith is because he is encouraging his listeners to realize that they have work yet to do. In the last verse of chapter 40, it reads, all these exemplars of faith, having gained approval of through their faith, did not receive what was promised, because God had provided something better for us, so that apart from us, they should not be made perfect. The reign of God that God began in the call to Abraham and continued through all of the prophets and through David and all of the faithful people of Israel, and that God made manifest in a new way in Jesus, that reign of God is not yet perfect. It is not yet complete. It has not yet come to its fullness, and that's because we are part of it. And our work is to continue the perfection of the reign of God, along with God, led by God, and empowered by Christ. We work to make perfect the reign of God, a work that many of us will not see here on this earth. And yet we are engaged in what? We are engaged in a race that we are to run with endurance, the race that is set before us, where we fix our eyes upon Jesus, is the race that each of us is to run with the encouragement of the folks in that cloud of witnesses, with the example of their faith before us, with the pattern that their lives have shown us. These are the things, this is the foundation upon which we build, this is the thing that gets us to the starting line and then helps us keep running. But lest we forget, our eyes are to be fixed on Jesus and the pattern of his life as well. The suffering that he endured for the goal that he achieved. You each probably have exemplars of faith. You each probably have people that you have known in your lives who have put a signpost on your way, helped you to run the race a little faster, given you rest when you were weary. As we remember, whether we are remembering people who serve this nation or whether we are remembering the people of the invisible and intergenerational faith fellowship of the church, let's each remember our individual exemplars and give thanks for them this weekend.